You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Carolyn Sherlock. Welcome to the Boat Galley.
Blech. Ask any cruiser. They'll probably tell you about one of their first trips and tell you that it was a trip from hell. The weather wasn't quite what they expected. There were engine troubles, they ran aground, torn sails, seasickness. There can be all sorts of elements in the storm. For many of us, it happens on our very first trip. The good news is that most of us learn from the experience and never have such a bad time again. It's definitely true for Dave and I. I remember one of Beth Leonard's presentations where she said the worst passage in their entire two circumnavigations, one of which included going more than halfway around the world in the Southern Ocean, was their first. If you've had a trip from hell, I want to encourage you that they won't all be like that. In fact, they'll almost certainly be better. And also, I'd like to explore a bit of what I think happens and why things do get better. First, let's talk about the weather forecasts. There are two issues with weather forecasts. First is that they're forecasts, not guarantees. Conditions may vary, sometimes considerably, from what was forecast. And second, until you have some offshore experience, it's hard to know what conditions are acceptable to you. We learn to check multiple forecasts from different sources and to watch for several days before we intend to leave. We're looking not just for favorable conditions, but also for reasonable agreement between sources and that the forecast itself is not changing significantly from run to run. It can be tempting to look only at favorable forecasts and discount those that aren't, or vice versa. Over time, you get a feel for which ones tend to be most accurate in your area. However, when forecasts are considerably different from one source to another, we tend to watch out. Additionally, if the forecast is changing significantly, not just a few hours of timing of a wind switch or squall, say, every time that it comes out, we're more leery of the conditions actually being as forecast. There's plenty of uncertainty there. We also tend to note general trends in the forecast and timing. To use a simplified example, if the forecast calls for north winds today, which we can see, and then it's becoming east overnight and south near dawn, then when we wake up in the morning, the wind is out of the east, we know it's likely the forecast isn't necessarily wrong as much as delayed. Ditto for squalls that are forecast to accompany a front line. If the squalls arrive sooner than expected, it's likely that the post-frontal wind conditions will also be early. Over time, we got better at how to read weather forecasts, but, to a large extent, the bigger cause of uncomfortable passages was not knowing how a forecast translated into offshore conditions. As inland small boat racing sailors, we had sailed many times in winds of 20 to 25 miles an hour. And frankly, we were good at it. So an offshore forecast of 20 to 25 knots right on the nose didn't even make us pause. Yeah, it'd be windy, but we're tough. We love heavy air. We win races in this stuff. Okay, the first thing that you think about is that one knot is actually 1.2 miles per hour. So 20 knots is actually 24 miles per hour. But that's not really the big difference. The big difference is offshore conditions. Offshore waves are bigger and pack a lot more punch. And the boat, loaded for cruising, doesn't point nearly as well as an inshore racing boat. Falling off a wave and motoring into seas that periodically wash the deck aren't fun. Beating into 25-knot winds on a cruising boat was not our idea of a good time, we learned. Now we look for winds that aren't on the nose, or if they are, we want them to be very mild. Basically, we'll end up motoring if we have to go straight into the wind. And we've learned what maximum winds we like on what points of sail. With time, we've also learned our boat better, and we've learned little tweaks to make it more comfortable in various conditions. And our experience in different conditions has made our expectations more realistic. I find that less than ideal conditions are much more tolerable when I'm expecting them, as opposed to when I'm expecting an easy sail. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, we've learned that we can handle crappy conditions. We still may not like them, but there is a sense of, we've done this before and survived. The first time really is the hardest. If you don't have much experience, I think classes can help with all of these points. But it's still different when you're on your own, checking the weather reports and making the go or no-go decision and coping with the actual conditions. With time, you get better at picking your windows and more confident in less than ideal conditions. Another element is staging locations. We had no idea about staging locations when we began cruising. Basically, a staging location is your jumping-off point for a passage. Typically, you'll have a pre-staging location where you can do your provisioning, enjoy whatever attractions there are in the area, and watch for a window. When it looks like a window might develop, you can move as close as possible to the actual jumping-off place and then leave when the window actually opens. Using a staging location this way can cut hours or even a day off an offshore passage, and, for shorter passages, can make it feasible to leave with a shorter window, or at least make it so that you have less than ideal conditions for a shorter time. Not using staging locations can greatly increase the chances of a bad trip. Sitting in the Florida Keys, where boats are prepping for a trip to the Bahamas, we see this all the time. Boats leaving from Marathon generally need at least a 2-day window to reach the Bahamas. But by going up to Key Largo first, in the protected waters of either the ICW, on the north side of the Keys, or the Hawk Channel, on south of the Keys but inside the reef, it's then a day sail to cross the Gulf Stream and be in Bimini. You don't need as long a window, and forecasts for the next 24 hours are generally quite reliable, so it's less likely you'll be caught in unexpected conditions. But the trick is, if possible, to get to the staging location before the window opens. If you have to use the window of good conditions to get to the staging location, and believe me, it happens, you may have to wait for the next window to get to your primary destination. The next thing to talk about is schedules. We've all heard that you just can't have schedules when you're cruising. We know that, but it takes for a while for it to really sink in. When we began cruising, we were eager to begin cruising. We wanted to get out there. Well, not a schedule in the sense of someone waiting for us at the other end. It was a schedule in our minds. We told everyone we were going. I'm sick of waiting. And the ever-popular emails from friends asking when we were going to head out. Just a little more pressure to accept a less-than-optimal forecast. We've learned to wait and enjoy where we are. And if we do head out on a somewhat less favorable forecast, it's far more of a conscious decision to accept the conditions, and not a case of, I didn't know it was going to be like this. Okay, then there's the mechanical problems. Whether it's a torn sail, engine problems, or a backed-up toilet, mechanical problems can ruin any trip. I'm certainly not going to say that experienced cruisers don't have them, but I know we had more when we were new, and we were more flustered by them. Offshore conditions put a bigger strain on the boat than you expect. Things break. Lumpy conditions will stir up fuel and cause blockages. With more boisterous conditions than you may be used to, you may not remember the proper procedures for things like the toilet. You may forget to close a Y valve and have all your fresh water siphon out while underway. And even if you're not offshore, a 10 or 12 day of sailing or motoring can tax systems that haven't done that before. Autopilots can stop steering. Batteries can be drained. Engines can overheat. Just to add insult to injury, as a new cruiser, you may not be sure how to fix the problem. It's helpful to have every owner's manual for every system and a few books such as Don Casey's or Nigel Calder's and a complete set of tools. But sometimes your biggest help will come from other cruisers. Get on the VHF and ask if someone has experience with such and such. So many times in our first year, we thought we had a monstrous problem that would require a tow and perhaps even a haul out. Others told us of much more simple solutions, or even stopped by and gave us a hand. Finally, if you're in an area with towing services, pay for a policy. Towboat US and SeaTow are the big ones in the US. Check with local boaters to see who has the best coverage in your area. It's far cheaper to buy a policy than to pay a per-mile towing fee. Okay, the good news. You learn to inspect your systems thoroughly, and you learn the weak parts of your systems that must be checked doubly. When you discover that something is a chronic problem, you engineer a better solution. And as for forgetting a procedure that leads to a problem, well, let's just say that once I discovered the consequences of not flushing the toilet properly, I never forgot again. Over time, you'll learn how to repair the various systems and mechanical failures, while still not fun, won't seem to be such a catastrophe. Last fall, I wrote about various problems we had on a 4-month trip to the Bahamas. Had we been in our first year of cruising, we would have wondered what we were doing wrong and felt totally overwhelmed. In our 10th year, we accepted the problems as par for the course. It was our first big trip on a new-to-us boat. We had plenty of spares, and we had confidence that between the books we had aboard, a bit of willingness to tackle problems, and the ability to ask for help on the VHF, email, Google, and even texting by satellite, we'd be fine. We also know that while many of our systems are certainly nice to have, such as our engine, we can live without most of them until we get to a good place to make repairs. And the last thing that I want to talk about for that first trip from hell is exhaustion. Your first big trip is likely to be exhausting on a number of levels. First is simply the anticipation. Whether you're excited or nervous, chances are good you didn't sleep well for a day or two before departure. And then add in the physical nature of the trip. Whether you're doing a multi-day trip or just a series of day trips, you may not have been on the go for so long before. If you're offshore, in particular, conditions are likely to be more tiring than you expect, or at least they were for us. And seasickness may rear its ugly head. Just sitting and bracing yourself against the motion of the boat is tiring. Add in moving around, eating, checking your position, and it's worse. When you're off watch, it's tough to sleep. If you're seasick, everything is horrible. If your partner is seasick, you may be virtually single-handing the boat and really get no rest. And with exhaustion comes irritability and poor coping skills. Just get me off this boat. If you're closer to shore, plotting courses and keeping an eye out for obstacles can be tiring. Crab pots, marks that weren't where they were expected. Fog, heading straight into the sun. Depths, shoaling, bridge heights, tides, currents. And if you've had weather woes or mechanical problems, the exhaustion will both be worse and compound the other problems. Talk about being totally frazzled. Experience helps here, too. Getting more sleep before a trip helps. Just getting used to being on a moving boat in these conditions helps, as you know what to expect and you're more confident in the things you have to do. But the other side of experience is knowing that you have to allow for tiredness. We need periodic catch-up days where we do nothing. I realize it isn't possible with longer offshore trips. It's one reason for first making shorter offshore trips. Overall, we found slowing down to be one of the biggest factors for making cruising less stressful. Okay, by talking about trips from hell, I don't want to be discouraging. In fact, just the opposite. If you've had a horrible, awful, miserable trip, I want to give you hope that future ones are almost certain to be better. Start by figuring out what the underlying problems were. Not that the weather was bad, for example, but why it caught you off guard. Not paying enough attention to the forecast, not realizing what the forecast conditions would be like on your boat and on that passage, having a deadline, whatever. Not the fact that you went aground, but what led to it. Not checking the chart, not updating the chart, not double-checking depths as you plotted your route, not checking other sources such as active captain, a problem perhaps with your depth sounder, not following the route you'd charted. The problem has happened and passed, so the idea isn't to dwell on it, but to know why it happened, and then figure out what you need to do differently next time so it doesn't occur again. Don't beat yourself up over it. I think everyone has had a trip from hell. Just don't keep making the same mistakes. Until next time, here's hoping you have no more trips from hell.
Bonnie Lass Charters is Mallorca's number one experience.
Bonnie Lass is a 57-foot converted fishing boat. She was built in 1949 as a herring ring netter in Scotland, and now she's set up for the Mediterranean. Apart from just relaxing in the sunshine on the deck, there's paddleboarding and any kind of exploring you can imagine up along the north coast of Mallorca here, quite often with Maggie the dog in tow as well. Bonnie Lass Charters is unique because no charter is really the same. We work really hard to make it the perfect day for each individual client. To be able to go out and enjoy the day with the guests on board is just fantastic.
For more information and to make a booking, visit bonnielasscharters.com.
My name is Matt Rutherford. I am the only person in history to have circumnavigated the Americas nonstop. I've sailed alone across the Atlantic twice. I've crossed the Pacific. I've sailed through the Bering Sea and around Cape Horn. I understand the challenges you will face trying to accomplish your blue water dreams. And I know how important it is to have the right boat. Whether buying a blue water boat or selling your blue water boat, Rogue Wave Yacht Sales has the experience to make that happen. Email me at matt@roguewaveyachtsales.com.